Speaking of Greek gods, I've recently started watching Creed 1 and 2.
Okay.
You've never seen them. Mm-mm. They are honestly really good.
I believe you.
Even Donna, my fiance, she was loving them. Like, they're so... I'm so ready to watch the third one.
You've always been a big fan of a good fighting movie.
Oh, yeah. And I don't know why it took me so long to watch these, because these are so good.
Yeah, I feel like when they came out, at least from the angle that I was, like, getting the marketing information from, it felt like, oh, this is just going to be cheesy.
That's what I thought,
That's what I think a lot of people thought.
It's not. It has heart. It has big muscles. It has sweat. It has everything you want in a fighting
Michael Jordan's
movie.
In it.
Michael Jordan himself.
the basketball player himself.
And Sly Stallone.
He's in the first two?
He's in the first two. I don't think he's in the third one. But they kind of give him a good send-off in the second one. Like, I'm okay with him not coming back if he never comes back.
I know nothing about the Rocky movies.
But no, but you've seen them.
Yeah, I mean, I know the run you run on steps to win.
Yes. Yeah. Well, he didn't run on steps to win, but Creed didn't.
Oh, really?
Least. Yeah. They make a reference to it at the end of the first one. It was very surprising.
They didn't do a training montage?
Oh, they did training montages, but he didn't run on the steps.
Okay, let me ask you this. Is it as good as the Never Back Down?
Oh, no. Never Back Down training montage will never be beat. If you've never watched Never Back Down, you need to go watch it. It's angsty. It's 90s. Well, no, I wouldn't say it's 90s. It's early 2000s, but man. Mr. Dijon Mustard himself. I don't know the actual actor's name, but it's his trainer in that. It's like Dijon. I don't know. I'm not going to try to butcher
that.
What
does he play? He plays... Oh. What is he in?
He's in Guardians of the Galaxy.
That's it, yeah.
As like the guy who goes, "Who are you?" And then he's like, "I'm Star-Lord." And he's like, "Who?" That's the guy. Yeah.
He's in something else.
I'm sure. He's in a lot of stuff, actually.
Yeah.
I don't know.
So watch your...
Watch Never Back Down, then watch Rocky 1 and 2, and then Creed 1 and 2 and 3, which is now in theaters.
And you're going to get your commissions from this.
Yeah. I make profit. All you have to do...
Now, I will say it, so if anybody doesn't know, I do know that there Michael B. Jordan is directing this third one, right?
Yes.
And he has, like... He's... What is the word I'm looking for?
He's a weeb.
But he has filled this movie with anime references.
Okay, yeah.
He's injected the movie.
Inject...
Does that feel good?
It doesn't feel great. Yeah, he has thoroughly saturated this movie.
Saturated with anime.
Saturated.
That's the name of the episode.
I sure hope not.
Watch me. I'm the one that has the power.
But, yeah, it's honestly...
saturated with anime is a very cursed word and phrase.
That is a cursed image. But you know about Rocky 2, about how...
is that the Russian?
I believe that's Rocky 2. Mm-hmm. In my mind, it is Rocky 2. If I'm wrong, okay. Tell me in the comments. Yeah. But anyways,
like comments.
That's when the Russian kills Apollo.
Mm. Who is his dad.
Who is his dad.
Okay. Spoilers for Creed.
And Creed 2, he goes up against Ivan Drago's son.
Yes, I did.
Maybe Ivan is the name of the son. I don't know. But he goes up against that guy's son.
Man, I bet that was like a real big moment for all the people that grew up with that movie.
Let me tell you. Because, I mean, obviously, you know, Drago is a force to be reckoned with. He was in the first one. His son throws one punch at the beginning of their fight. Of a fight. I won't say which one.
Yeah.
But He blocks it and still gets knocked into the ropes. And I'm like, he's going to die.
Wait, so I do think I would like these because I just really like over-dramatized fighting sequences.
They're no, so you good. Have no idea. You need to watch these movies. Yeah, there's a moment, like, because, you know, in boxing, if you get knocked down, you have, like, 10 seconds to get up.
Right.
There's a lot of that. So, get ready for that. But
a lot of dramatic
tension. And you know how, like, dramatic tension you were talking about? There's one where he gets knocked down, and he is, like, on the ground, and he starts, like, punching the ground, and then finally gets up. Like, he's, like, psyching himself up to get up. Yeah.
Oh.
I'm like, oh, man.
Maybe we'll just stop the podcast and we'll just go watch this movie.
I would love it. Because, first of all...
That was a short one.
See you guys. But, like, it's such a well-shot movie, too.
Yeah, I could tell from, like, the little snippets I've seen. It looks, like, really well done.
Because I tried to get Donna to watch Rocky One.
Yeah.
And just the start of Rocky One, it's so dang slow. But that's how every movie was back in the day. Every movie, I feel, was very slow.
Yeah.
Like
it's just like a different directorial style back then.
Yeah. Because, like...
There was probably less technology. There obviously was less technology to work with, too.
But, like, I was like, I'm just ready for him to start fighting Apollo.
Yeah.
In that first movie. Because I was like, this is dragging.
Ugh.
But anyway.
Would you say it was Drago-ing? I hit you while you were drinking your drink. It looks like we should hop in the spaceship.
We should get out of here. Thank you for joining us. My name's Lucas Oxendine.
Pause for I was cleaning my glasses. My name's Gabe Oxendine.
And welcome to OmniTalk, an omniversal traversal through all things
meta. Verse.
Ah. Could have done reverb on that, but that was all me, baby.
That was straight off the dome, man.
Straight off the dome. I like to keep things spicy, you know?
Mm-hmm. Right. I can still reverb it, and it'll just get real weird.
God, it's going to get freaky up in here. But go ahead and tell them what we're talking about.
We are talking about Gore and Thor. I'll elaborate.
Yes, please. That means we are going to be talking people.
About... We're going to be talking about the movie, the fourth...
Thor 4. More Thor.
The most Thor. No. The
it makes
arguably the least Thor.
It makes my head Thor.
It is nothing. We're talking about Thor: Love and Thunder, the recent MCU movie. And then we are also talking about the source material that inspired.
Well, we should say part of the source material.
Yeah. A lot of stories that come out in the MCU are kind of an amalgam of a couple things.
Yeah, you can kind of say that about all stories.
But we're talking about specifically what inspired the villain of that movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it's referred to in the comics as the Saga of Gore the God Butcher.
Yes.
It is not just like a standard run. My understanding is it was a kind of... It ran through a few different comic series.
Mm-hmm.
Am I wrong about that?
Well, no, it was mainly this one, but I think the backstory.
Okay, yeah, there was like one offshoot that was... Anyways, we're talking about the Saga of Gore the God Butcher.
Yeah, found in issues 1 through 11 of Thor, God of Thunder.
What's the author in the...
The writer is Jason Aaron. He has done a much longer run of Thor. Like, okay. He also did, if I'm correct, he also did the story of Lady Thor, Jane Foster becoming Thor.
Oh.
Which okay. also ties into some of the source material for Love and Thunder.
Oh, okay, yeah.
But then you had the artist for most of it, besides one issue, was Asad Ribic. Ribic? I've heard it Ribic and Ribic.
That's the way it's spelled.
Yeah.
Like an IC on the end.
Yeah. Amazing artist. We'll get into that later. But, and for issue 6, it was Butch. I don't know how to say this, so I'm going to spell it. G-U-I-C-E. I don't know how to say that. Don't even try.
Okay.
Don't even try. We're not going to butcher that. We're not going to
see what you
gore the god butcher that. But anyways.
I don't even know where to begin.
You don't know where to begin? Well, let's first...
What were we going to do?
We're first going to start by giving our opinions on Thor, Love, and Thunder.
Let's back up just a little bit.
Okay.
Why did you want to do this? This was your idea.
Okay, so backstory. I decided that I was too much of a DC fanboy.
Yes.
And so I said, I'm going to read Marvel.
Yeah.
And I had no idea what I was going to read. I was going to let the art choose the book for me. And I found this little book called Thor, the God of Thunder. And
you bought the deluxe edition.
Yeah. My cover blows his cover out of the water.
Let me tell you. He has a hardback version that is like got...
It's just really got amazing... Because Asad Ribic, or Ribic, I still don't know. I'm going to go with Ribic.
Ribic, that's what
it was. He does not only watercolor, but For his covers, he does watercolor.
Okay.
For his covers. In the interiors, which are like the pages you actually read, those are just like inked and some other person colors them. Mm.
That's interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's why there's kind of like a slight quality difference between the two.
The covers look incredible.
Yeah, which the interiors look incredible.
I mean, the
too.
Whole thing looks incredible, but
obviously the covers stand out more. Yeah. But as soon as I saw that cover, I was like, I'm gonna read this, and I was pleasantly surprised. Because this beats most DC things I've read. Like, this is one of my favorite stories.
Yeah.
And so whenever I heard that Thor Love and Thunder was going to have the main villain be Gore the God Butcher.
And it was...
And it was being played by Christian Bale.
Yeah.
Who, if you've never seen American Psycho, you should watch that movie. If you're appropriately aged. But I was like, this is a no-brainer. This is gonna be a hit. You've got Chris Hemsworth as Thor coming off of the astounding performances in not only Ragnarok, but also Endgame and Infinity War.
And I would say Ragnarok as a whole. I loved Ragnarok.
Yeah, me too.
Like, I thought it was such a fresh experience at that time when the mold for MCU was still like pretty standard.
Mm-hmm.
That movie came out and just like shattered the expectations of what movies could be like at that time.
Yeah. And then same director as Thor Ragnarok, yeah. Taika Waititi. It's like you can't go wrong. This is going to be a good movie. So I was very excited.
Yeah.
And,
well, I'll tell you my experience with the book.
Okay.
You gave it to me. You said, you need to read this.
This was way before the movie came out.
This is way before we even conceived this podcast. This was before we even lived in this house we're sitting in right now.
Yeah.
It was years ago. And you gave it to me, sat on my shelf.
Yep, sure
never
did.
Read it.
I was a little mad.
Never read it. And then you brought it up here about wanting to do it on the show, and I was like, well, I guess I'm going to read it now. And then you had already told me, I knew a little bit more, and you brought it up after the movie had come out, and I hadn't seen the movie yet either. So it was a double whammy of like, yeah, we should definitely do this, because I haven't experienced either one.
Yeah. So yeah, I want to preface, my experience was, I read the book, loved the book. I know that he's going to be the main villain of this next Thor movie. So I had already read the book, watched the movie.
Yeah.
With Gabe, since he hadn't seen or nor read either of them,
yeah,
we did things a little differently, and I advised him to watch the movie.
Yes.
Then read the book.
That is important. See,
yes. I wanted to see if that would alter the perception of either.
Yeah. All right, we're going to get into this. we're going to start. We're starting with the assumption that most people have watched the movie.
Yes.
But probably have not read this part of the source material.
Yeah.
So we're not going to like go like on a deep dive on the events of the movie. We will bring up events of the movie as we compare them to the because we want to kind of give the source material its due. Mainly because we just think it'd be a better listening experience because a lot of people don't know this story. So we're going to, you said you wanted to begin with our opinions on the movie.
Yes. We're going to start with our opinions on the movie.
Okay.
I would like you to go first, please.
Okay. I'll tell you how this went down. So my wife and I, Lindsay, we sat down to watch this movie. I fell asleep halfway through. I truthfully haven't had a MCU movie that has not jived with me. Just the whole vibe. I don't know why. I did not like the movie overall. Let me just say that in the beginning.
Well, okay. Go ahead and give a rating. 1 to 10. What, like, how many jealous Stormbreakers out of 10 would you give this?
Ratings are hard. I think, I don't know if I have a number.
Okay.
But I can say that it's probably the least interested in a movie that I've seen in the MCU ever. Okay. I think it is truly, it's the worst one that I've seen.
Okay.
Yeah, in my opinion. That is my opinion. It's the weakest.
Weakest entry into their lineup.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know why. Do you want me to elaborate?
I would like to hear your reasoning why.
I don't know why.
Okay.
Well, at the time I didn't know why.
Mm-hmm.
Until I actually was like, I don't understand why this didn't click with me. And I went and talked to a lot of people who had watched the movie to get various opinions. Most people that I talked to were like lukewarm on it.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't like crazy about it. They also didn't hate it. They didn't have the reaction I did. I like actually did not like this movie. Okay. Like from the beginning, I didn't like any of the line delivery. Something was just off with it for me. And I talked to Shannon, friend of the show Shannon. She hated it. Saw it really? In theaters okay. And was like, I can't believe that this is what this movie is. Because like the expectation of the follow-up to Ragnarok was just like, I know what I'm getting into. And it didn't click for her, and I believe a few other people that I know were with her at the movie, and they also didn't drive with it very well. All that's to say, I'm rambling a little bit, but I don't know. It really just kind of threw me off. I was like, I just actually don't understand why this isn't working for me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just rambling right now, but I think what I landed on after thinking about it was that the tone. Okay, yeah, this is what I wanted to bring up.
Okay,
I think that the MCU has committed so strongly to this persona that Thor has, and I don't think that this aloof, like constantly making jokes. Like, kind of, and I get that a lot has happened to him, like, throughout the movies. Like, mm-hmm. a lot of trauma has happened to him with, like, losing tons of family members and close people that he loves. And I understand they're kind of going with, like, his aloofness and his humor and all that stuff is, like, a way to cope with that.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't land for me when you're, like, trying to create a story that, like, needs some drama to it or needs some other tone. Having him in there and being so committed to that one persona just takes me out of, I think it just takes me out of like whatever drama you're trying to create with any of the other story. I think that's what I landed on.
So if I was going to give this a grade out of 1 to 10 jealous Stormbreakers, I would give this, it would be like a 3.5 to a 4.
Okay.
I don't like it.
Yeah.
I wanted to like it really bad.
Yeah.
Just because, you know, it's,
well, you've said why. I mean, I really like the source material.
But completely wasted Gore the God Butcher. Like, completely. Because we'll get into, like, how good of a character he is. But I have a theory on why he kind of had to be wasted. And we'll get into that later. Okay. I want to pitch this concept to you on why he kind of, he failed in this movie. But, you know, like you said, like, you have this very, very funny Thor, not very serious.
Which, like, they have, like, committed to.
Now. Yes. Which I think is fine, you know, but I think at some point in the movie, they should have been like, nah, this is serious. Like, he should have been like the rugs pulled out from under him. Like, this isn't the time to be silly.
Because they had the right villain tone to do that.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And they've done stuff like that before. Like, you know, like, they've achieved a very serious but also funny movie with Infinity War and Avengers Endgame.
This same director's done it countless times.
Yeah. Like, oh, yeah. Let's talk about Jojo Rabbit.
Yeah.
From Taika Waititi.
Yeah.
Very funny. Like, very whimsical, funny movie. But then you get hit with the reality of what's going on.
Yeah.
Like, he knows how to do that.
I think that is you're helping me pinpoint what didn't work for me, is mm-hmm. I never felt that shift.
Exactly. Ever. There was no shift, if you ask me. But, like, and there are elements in this movie that I really like. Mm-hmm. Like, I like the jealous Stormbreaker. I think it's a funny concept.
Yeah.
To have it be jealous of Mjolnir.
Yeah.
Like, I completely get that. I thought it was hilarious.
Yeah.
And Chris Hemsworth is a funny actor. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad they're trying to let him be more funny.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, like, there has to be a moment where things get serious.
Yeah.
And, like, they almost had it whenever Korg gets shot with the lightning bolt, Zeus's lightning bolt.
Oh, yeah.
And died, but then they couldn't commit to that either.
Yeah.
This is the movie where gods die. It's Gore the God Butcher.
And that's where we'll be enlightened by our discussion about this book. But this Gore the God Butcher in this story is, like, we're talking Thanos level threat.
Yeah.
Of, like, for the universe.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, yeah, I'll get.
Yeah.
But anyways.
He's, like, he's terrifying. Like, even, actually terrifying.
Yeah. Even Thor, he, like, throws Zeus's lightning bolt back at him. You think he died. But in the post-credit scene, no, he's fine.
Yeah. That's the interesting thing, is if you have a name like the God Butcher.
Mm-hmm. And
needs to be
everyone besides, like, maybe two gods are killed off screen.
Yeah.
Like, that's not.
Okay.
It's not.
Yeah.
Those are my problems.
Yeah.
And I think the editors butchered Christian Bale's performance. Because I know there's the opening scene of, like, Gore's backstory.
That worked. I rewatched it after reading mm-hmm. the book, and I actually think it was a decent portrayal until you meet the first god.
Yes. It was great until then. But, like, there was a moment where I was like, I think it was whenever Gore's daughter dies and he has to bury her. And I'm like, oh, this is it. Christian Bale's going to really, like, you know, he's going to perform right now. Like, it's going to be like a big scream or something, which apparently they recorded but didn't put in the movie.
Because and I'm like, I think it tonally wouldn't have made sense with the way they were shaping the rest of the movie.
Yeah, but I'm like, you're just throwing all his good. That's why you hire Christian Bale.
Yeah.
To do that performance. And they didn't do him justice, I don't think.
Mm-hmm. Which is a bummer. And I don't think this whole episode's going to be a bummer. We just wanted to be very honest about our opinions about this. Because I do think there's good conversation to be had about the comparisons here.
Because everybody in this movie is good.
Mm-hmm.
Like, but I think, I don't know what happened to it.
Like I said, I don't,
I couldn't tell you what happened to this movie. Like, it should have been a hit, but it wasn't.
Yeah. I love the aesthetic.
Oh, yeah.
Of like, having it, like, very 80s, like, all the stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That really, the marketing for this movie worked for me. I was ready.
Yeah, I was hype.
But I do think my opinion, yeah. So, I want to clarify my trajectory. Mm-hmm. I watched half this movie and fell asleep. I read the book after that because I didn't have time to finish the movie before I read the book. I proceeded to finish the movie. I watched the whole movie last night. So I did finish the movie. I just wanted to make that clear.
Mm-hmm.
So I had alluded to the fact that I fell asleep, but I have seen this whole movie.
Yes.
You want to take like a short little break and then come back and talk about the book?
Yeah, let's take a break.
Get to the meat of things. Butcher it up.
Better. And we're back.
We are sipping now.
What are you sipping?
This is a change. We're doing coffee.
Because it's late.
It's only 9:45 at night.
We're basically old men.
No, we are sipping Echelon. The upper echelon.
Coffee.
No, it's actually called Echelon from Onyx Coffee Roasters in Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
And Lucas bought this a few months ago.
Yeah.
And saved it. So it's not fresh.
This was meant to be given a while ago, but I keep on forgetting it, so.
No, but we just brewed some coffee in our break. We actually do take breaks whenever we say we're going to take breaks.
Or do we?
World may never know. Yeah. The spaceship's got, like, real nice coffee equipment.
It does. We have an espresso machine.
Real nice coffee equipment.
I was going to say AeroPress, because that sounds very scientific.
That does.
But then if anybody knows anything about coffee, they'll be like, that's not bad.
Nice. I brewed this in a Kalita Wave. That's not a lie. And Kalita Wave does sound pretty cool.
Sounds like we're in California. Sunshine.
I ordered one of a poster for the wall.
Of Remember the Titans?
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. One day, we'll talk about those metahumans. My favorite story ever. It's my favorite movie. Just so you know.
I mean, it's a good movie.
Let's talk about it. We did a little surprise there in the middle of the whatcha sipping. People thought it wasn't coming.
But. So let's go ahead and talk about one of my favorite comics, Thor, God of Thunder. So, yeah, I just want to talk about, again, I got to talk about the art. The art is so good. Like, we're going to put pictures up, obviously, on the Instagram.
Yeah.
So you can visually feast on this stuff.
How would you describe it? You have a better language for describing the style.
So, let me look at a few of them. Because, like, the main cover I have, I mean, he uses watercolor, from what I understand, for his covers.
Yeah.
And so there's a certain, I don't know, there's, like, a transparency to it.
Right. At least works really well with a lot of thunder in the background. Yeah, and stuff like that.
But like
and lightning, I mean.
Yeah, and like the shadows and stuff. I don't know a lot about painting because I've never been bold enough to even try learning how to paint. But like, there's just something to it. On this one that I'm looking at, like you have fog rolling in underneath, which is very easy to do with watercolors, from what I'm told. But like his cape kind of disappears into it, and there's just some like a je ne sais quoi to it. You know what I'm saying?
I do know what you're saying.
Like I can't even describe how much I love his art. Like he's probably top five for me of artists, even with the interiors, which is a different medium that he's using, but still just as good. Like you can tell the fundamentals are there. This is almost like halfway in between, because I talked about how what's his name, Frank Quitely, talked about how he like does form really well. So does Assad Ribic. He does form really well, and you can tell that in his art. Like he knows the fundamentals of form and the human body, and just like he just makes buildings out of blocks. Which sounds really fucking dumb whenever I say it like that. But, like, there's a place called Omnipotent City. And it's just blocks, but it looks so good.
Right.
Like, you can just tell the form and all that stuff. But he's kind of like a mix. Like, he knows the form like Frank does. But the level of, like, color and detail is like Alex Ross level, especially in his watercolors.
For those that don't know, Alex Ross is an artist who he paints everything he does, right?
Almost everything. Yeah. He does do regular pencil and ink sometimes.
Even if you don't think you've seen a picture by Alex Ross, you've seen a picture by
Alex Ross. Have most likely seen Alex Ross in some form.
We will also post some stuff.
Yeah. But, like, it's, like, the perfect combination of those two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would definitely be why you're drawn to it, because you're a big Alex Ross fan.
Yeah, because he was the one that got me into, like, actually considering comic art as a career.
Yeah. So it makes sense that you were so attracted to this novel.
Yeah, because, I mean, first of all, this novel is very attractive. Like, there's no hiding it. Like, I'll post some of my favorite pages from this. There's just so many.
I mean, like, you could just post all the covers. The covers are just beautiful.
Yeah, but now I do want to talk about the art in one section.
This is a common thing in comics. I don't know if you've ever read any like collection of comics.
Yeah.
There oftentimes there will be like a few issues that might have been done by a different artist.
Yeah.
And it often takes me out of the story.
Yeah. Which in this...
Which happened to me when I was reading the first run of Flash in New 52. Mm-hmm. They flipped artists quite frequently.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. That's just an aside that sometimes that happens when you're reading these, like, longer collection of novels or stories.
Yeah, because, like, the reason they do that is because, you know, sometimes you just can't meet a deadline. Like, because especially, like, whenever you're trying to create art at a level and scale like a comic book, it takes a lot of time. And sometimes you run behind. And so they have to bring in another artist to fill a role. Like maybe just do one issue just so you can catch up on the next issue.
Yeah.
Which is perfectly fine because like people are human. They're going to, you know, fall behind sometimes.
But and it's nice to know that they give them the room to...
Yes. Because that's what you want to. Like... Another example of this, an opposite end of the spectrum, is Batman 3 Jokers, done by Jason Fabok. That took forever to release. And because Jason...
Really, really long time.
Like a very long time. Because Jason wanted to do all of the art in it. It's only 3 issues. They were bigger issues than normal. But
I read it in one sitting.
Yeah, he wanted it to be... perfect.
Yeah.
And he took his time, and luckily DC
allowed him.
Uncommonly, like uncharacteristically actually allowed him to do that. Yeah. And it
paid off.
It shows like he took his time and he did.
Yeah.
He did a work of art, which is now arguably like this just came out not too long ago. And it's already an instant classic, like a Batman story, if you ask me.
In this instance, the one issue that was another artist was, I'm assuming same writer.
Writer, but
it was an origin story, so it actually kind of fit the with the idea of
like
it
it's a flashback
in there. Yeah,
yeah, I get that, but also at the same time, like I won't say that it's bad art. It's just it's such a difference from what you were looking at to what this is.
Yeah.
Like it's a completely different style.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to, I don't know.
It didn't bother me that bad. I think you are a little more critical.
I'm more critical. Like, cause I'll stop reading sometimes if the art turns bad, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Turns bad in a book.
That happened to me with what I've referenced with Flash. I was like really into it, and then there was like a few issues of an artist that I didn't enjoy, and it almost just I almost stopped.
It just takes you out of it.
Yeah,
like you're really enjoying the story, you have a lot of momentum, especially in collections like this where you can breeze through. You're basically binging an entire comic run in one sitting, but then you get to a art that is very different than what you're used to, and it completely throws you off.
All right, you want to get into the story, because there's a decent amount of stuff.
So,
Gore, the God Butcher, much like the movie, he is wronged by the gods, like his gods, that were not there for his people on his planet, which was a desert planet, how the movie started.
Yes.
And he is wronged in such a way that it's almost like doubt. He's almost doubtful of what's happening, like whether there are gods. And in their culture, even the idea of speaking into existence that a god doesn't exist is like blasphemous.
Yes.
It would be akin to like I don't know what it would be akin to. It basically, nobody talks ill of gods because they are there and they're omnipotent and they always have a plan. Well, in the story, he loses his wife. He loses his... Was it? No, he lost his mom, his wife, then his daughter.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. And he lost every bit of his family.
Yes.
And he's burying his daughter. I think this is the key point, because he buries his daughter in the movie as well, but or his son.
Is it his son? I think it's his son. Let me make sure about that.
Yeah, he buries her, and this is not the titrated version, but I think this is important because I think like this will tie into like a lot of the thesis of that son.
It is a son.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, he buries him. And in doing so, you know, apparently putting any individual in the earth is like a smack in the face to the gods, basically. And I believe in this same scene when he's burying the child, two gods like crash into the planet that he's on. They've never seen a god before. Mm-hmm. They're literally going off of like faith.
Yeah. And Gore's the only one that sees this, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gore walks over, and he pleads with the gods. He says, one god. I think one of them killed the other.
Yeah, one of them's already dead. The other one, the one clad in black armor is dead.
Yes.
Supposedly.
Yeah.
If any of you all listeners are Marvel fans, we know who he is. Just so you know.
Yeah.
But
one in black armor.
Yes, dead. Is air quotes dead.
And then
one in gold armor is still alive.
Yeah. And he pleads with them, our people like needed you, because he's starting to doubt. And basically the god's like, I don't care about any of this. Like, I'm just bickering with this person, and I got back at him.
Yeah.
And so Gore was like, immediately was like, defends his population, basically renouncing like gods are pieces of trash. They don't care about anything but themselves. They're selfish. And in this scene, the black armor off of this individual, like, sentiently comes over to him, and he is like, basically becomes one with this armor, this being that is like this alien ooze, and it becomes a weapon.
Ivan Ooze.
It's not Ivan Ooze. It's, I'm assuming,
The name is All Black the Necro Sword.
Okay. A symbiote.
It is a symbiote.
It is a symbiote. They don't directly say that.
They do not, because it acts...
A symbiote, which is
exactly what Venom like a symbiote is. But it doesn't... Well, I guess it does have sentience, because it does sort of communicate through constructs at the end of the story.
Yeah.
But it doesn't talk like Venom does or anything like that.
Okay. Well, I'll speed this up a little bit. Basically, this is important because this is a delineation from the story, the book versus the movie, is that this is like a sentient, you know, this is a symbiote. And in the book, or in the movie, it is just a sword that somewhat has some sort of willpower over the wielder. So we move forward. Truthfully, I don't remember what happens next.
So the interesting thing about this story is it does not take place during one set point in time.
Yeah. So it will be difficult to talk about. So we might not cover chapter by chapter.
So yeah, I think instead of going chapter by chapter, we should go Thor by Thor.
So spoiler alert, there's three iterations of Thor that we're following.
It's the same Thor, just at three different points in his life.
Yes.
There's young Thor before he even wields Mjolnir. He has not become worthy yet to wield Mjolnir. Then you have modern day Thor.
I'll add young Thor. The Sparknuts are arrogant, you know, reckless. He has not been humbled in any way.
To put it in MCU terms, this is pre-Thor the first movie. This is like the arrogant person who has not gone to Earth, learned humility, or any of that.
Yeah.
Met Jane, any of that.
Okay, yeah.
Because the time period is like Viking time for this is like, version of Thor.
Yeah.
I would
equate this to the actual mythological version of Thor. Yes. That is like who this is.
Yeah. Then you have modern day Thor. This is the one that like operates with the Avengers and stuff, because Iron Man even shows up during this to help him out. And then you have Old King Thor, which is
so freaking cool.
Which is basically, he is now taken up basically the mantle of Odin.
Yes.
He
has the Odin sword and Mjolnir. And that's all you need.
He also has the Odin Force, which is a very powerful weapon. I won't get into
It's Force Lightning.
No. But
it's the Star Wars Tywin.
This is
he's waiting for.
He is also the last living Asgardian, I believe. Not technically, because his daughters are still alive, I think. But anyways, let's start with the youngest version.
Difficult to talk about.
Yes. We'll start
It was difficult to read at some points.
Yeah. We'll start with the youngest version of Thor. So this version is, you know, during Viking times, he is all about battle and proving himself and women and drinking. It's all he cares about. So he's helping some people, some like Vikings invade Russia, basically what would become Russia,
modern day Russia. Yeah.
And this other army is said that they have like two gods that were going to help them.
And he's real pumped.
Yeah. He is real pumped. He does not care at all about this army. All he wants to do, he's basically leading this army that he's with. He doesn't care if they die. He's just leading them into battle so he can take on these other gods.
Yeah.
Then the gods aren't showing up. Then a Pegasus flies down from the heavens covered in blood. And they're like, wait, what? And Thor's like, I'm going to go check this out. And they're like, but what about the battle? And he's like, don't care, and leaves. Yeah, yeah. He's like, I had no interest in this battle at all. I was looking for the gods, basically.
And he finds them.
He does find them. One is in headless there. On a black Pegasus, basically. He then finds an assailant in the skies. This is his first meeting with Gore, the God Butcher.
Yeah.
And Gore slaps him around like a little child that he is, almost killing him in the process. That's how much he beats him down. Thor is arrogant at this point. He's like boasting about how he's from Asgard and all this stuff, which is important because Gore has no idea who Thor is. Yeah. He just knows that he's a god and he's gonna kill him. He then mentions Asgard, where a bunch of other gods are living. He's like, oh, that's nice. Because he has just been kind of crisscrossing around the universe, finding gods to kill.
Yeah. Yeah, the Necro Sword literally gave him the ability to
kill gods.
To kill gods. Like, his name is the God Butcher because he is actually going to these places.
And butchering them.
Like, butchering is the right way to... It's not... It's actual torture. Like, he is making sure they know why he's there.
Yeah.
To destroy them. And he just whole cloth believes that all gods are selfish, they're arrogant, they don't care about humanity, they don't do anything for anyone. And his mission is, I want a godless world.
Yeah. Because, like, if they're selfish enough to fight amongst themselves while people actually needed help, then they don't deserve to be gods anymore. While they're fighting in the sky, Gore, he has some great dialogue.
So good.
And he's like, I can't help but wonder, little god, what do they worship you for? While he's like tearing him through the sky and beating him. Are you the god of axes, drunkenness, vanity, or war perhaps? I have killed so many gods of war and gods of fear, chaos, blood and wrath, jealousy, lies, plagues and earthquakes. I've killed them all. What are you the god of? And a beaten and battered Thor goes thunder and calls down this giant bolt of lightning to just absolutely rock Gore. And that was the end of their first interaction together.
Yeah.
Gore is an absolute savage.
Yeah.
He does not care. A big part of this is, Thor almost dies after their first interaction. Seemingly is dead, but then, rests for a little bit. Drinks a bunch of ale, sleeps with a bunch of women or something, comes back. He finds out that Gore is hiding in this cave. So he goes to this cave. Gore is ready for him. Like, another butchered god is about to die, and he tells him where the cave is. He's like, you shouldn't have come. And he's like, you should have at least brought more of the gods of Asgard. And he's like, yeah, I'm going to be enough. he goes into this cave. And Gore, of course, was ready for him and chains him up with his, like, constructs and stuff.
Very similar to the scene in the movie.
Yes. And just tortures him for a little bit. Because I'm pretty sure he even makes reference to he's tortured gods of torture before.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
He sure did. And he said, I basically was like, it took 2 weeks, but they told me everything I needed.
Yeah. Okay, try to
tortured the god of torture.
Yeah, try to wrap your head around that. He tortured a god of torture. That's insane.
I also want you to, while we're talking about this, imagine this movie you've seen.
Yes.
And we're talking about this torturer of gods, and what you saw on screen and the juxtaposition of these two stories. That's key here in this conversation.
Yeah, so while he's torturing him, the group of people that Thor was helping originally come and try to save him. Of course, Gore is just tearing them apart, but it gives him time to get away from him, and he then proceeds to cut off Gore's arm, presumably killing him, at least he thought. Come to find out, not so much. But it did give Gore knowledge in the fact that there are gods that are still more powerful than he is. Which this then rejuvenates his lust for killing and butchering gods.
Yeah. Because previously, both of these individuals hadn't met a force to be reckoned with.
Yes. Until this moment. Neither of them have, like, ever dealt with someone this powerful.
Yeah.
Then, now we can move on to current day Thor. Tell us a little bit about current day Thor.
I don't remember where he starts out, truthfully, because this... this did feel a little every story mixed together for me.
Mm-hmm.
He goes to...
yeah, he starts by answering the prayers of essentially an alien for rain, and he brings rain.
Yes. And then they... I believe that individual there was like... He asked him, you know, where were your gods?
Mm-hmm.
And they said that they haven't been around for... they haven't answered their prayers in quite some time.
Yeah.
And so he gets curious.
Yeah, he kind of gets mad. He's like...
yeah. Oh, yeah, mad's a better word.
Yeah, he's like, either they're negligent or there's something else going on. Either way, he's going to find out.
And so he goes to this, basically their throne room.
Mm-hmm.
And... shows up and things are already like off. He doesn't understand, you know, there's nobody out and about, you know, there's not any signs of life in there. And he goes through their halls and discovers just a massacre,
mm-hmm.
a butchering of all these gods, like very gruesome.
And these are like giants
too. These are also giants, which is also, I think, was very intentional,
yeah,
as to prove the point that he's killing no matter what.
Yeah. And I think he even makes mention of, like, there was almost no sign of struggle, to insinuate how powerful Gore was, that they couldn't even really struggle against him.
Mm-hmm.
And this is like the equivalent of Gore walking up to Asgard and butchering every god in Asgard.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, this is their domain.
Yeah.
That he went to.
This and is walking them. Into the gates of Olympus and killing every person.
Yeah.
And this is also the first time that he knows, he walks in there and he knows exactly who did this.
Yeah, he starts getting suspicions on who could have done
this. And he's scared.
Yes.
That's also important.
Mm-hmm.
He's actually, we forgot to mention this, but young Thor,
mm-hmm.
was scared after that confrontation. You know, they finished and he butchered him,
mm-hmm.
air quotes, thought he killed him. Somebody around, one of the people in the army that was with him says, you know, we'll sing about this for centuries to come. And he says, nobody will say a word about this. You know,
yeah.
He says, this didn't happen.
I think it's also because... like, not only because he was scared,
yeah,
but also because, like, he almost died.
Yeah.
And he doesn't want people to know about that.
He's still a little arrogant.
He's very arrogant at this point in his life.
But also, he's just like, this was terrifying. I don't want anybody to know about this.
I also don't want people bringing this back up to me.
Yeah. And so, when he recognizes this, he panics.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't...
he's seeking answers because he... he's like, okay, if this pantheon has been missing,
mm-hmm.
not knowing, no one knew that they were dead,
mm-hmm.
he then seeks out answers by going to Omnipotent City, basically a meeting place for any gods from any pantheon can go here and learn knowledge, can talk to each other, and stuff like that. Now, this is similar to the Omnipotent City that we see in Thor, Love, and Thunder. Because, like, all the gods do come here.
Right.
But in the comic, it's more like a library than anything.
Yeah.
At least from what we see.
And so it's more like a coliseum in the...
yeah, in the... yeah. Yeah.
Which, I guess that's more theatrical.
Yeah. But he then starts researching.
This is actually really important, I think, because... previously, you know, our understanding of Thor was, you know, this very, you know, I'm going to go out and beat my way through all the problems I have. And he is spending hours and days researching and reading and like doing uncanny Thor.
Uncanny X-Men.
Yeah. I'm sure there's an uncanny Avengers too.
Oh, I'm pretty sure there is.
But yeah, it's not normal behavior for him.
Yeah, because even like there's like this pixie fairy librarian guy that is showing him around, and he's doing like quick jabs at him because he's like, last time you came here, you were like a little kid and you basically you kept on hitting me.
Yeah.
Essentially. And Thor's like, please don't fault me for the folly of my youth and stuff. He's like showing him around. He even makes a jab at his dad too.
He's specifically asking for the gods who have died.
And no, missing gods. Missing gods.
Okay. And then he's like, well, if you want to know about the missing gods, just go to the library that has all the dead gods in it.
Well, right? No. He then asks about the dead gods.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, well, they're over here. I can't remember exactly, but it was the missing gods first.
Yeah.
Then he learns about the dead gods. But he finds out that, like, that pantheon that he witnessed being dead and butchered were not in the right place. They were in the missing gods, not the dead gods.
Yeah.
So this kind of piques his interest, and he starts researching more of the missing gods who have been inactive, and then searching them out. And he goes, like, world by world, finding these gods, and sure enough, every single one of them has been butchered.
Mm-hmm.
Like, one of them actually is referenced in the movie. It's that giant behemoth.
The ice behemoth thing. Yeah.
He even talks about how they were friends and stuff. The last time they saw each other, they passed each other in the starways and waved at each other. Which this thing is like a giant like beast.
Yeah.
But he also says he's like the reigning champ of... Let me see if I can find it exactly. Something about being like the reigning champ of like a battle thing. Let me see if I can find it. Hold on. Okay. Falagar, the behemoth, is his name. A patron god of the galactic frontier, champion of the Tournament of Immortals for 5 centuries straight. So think about how powerful this thing is.
Mm.
It was also visually referenced in the trailer, like this shot. This is like a complete recreation that they did in the movie.
Yeah.
And that also gave me hope that this movie was going to be very faithful to this comic, but no.
That did not happen.
Current day Thor does eventually go back to that cave that he swore he would never go to again.
Mm.
And he finds a person who looks very similar to Gorr, but is actually another god that Gorr put there. Shadrach was his name. What was the reason he put him there? I can't remember.
I think he killed everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
And for plot reasons, did not kill him.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember exactly why, but he's there.
Yeah, he's there. I guess we can move on to old King Thor now. Now, this guy looks like an absolute unit. He's missing an eye, just like Odin. He has the Thor sword.
And actually, they don't tell you this Thor. You actually kind of think this is Odin.
If you didn't know, he looks like Odin.
Yeah.
Big beard, missing an arm.
Yeah.
And he has a destroyer arm as his
He has a destroyer arm.
Yeah.
And three, technically, like, very powerful god weapons.
Yes. And we pick up with him. He's kind of in his throne room. Gore's constructs are known as, like, the Black Berserkers. And there's, like, armies of them outside of his throne room. He kind of decides he's had enough. And he's going to go out and have the hero's death. Or try... He's going to try to at least take down Gorr. He goes out. And he does his damnedest. With all of his might. He goes out. And... he basically gets overwhelmed, and he has this line where he's like, as the darkness came over me, I felt body float above Asgard. He's like, it's finally happening. I'm going to see my father and everything in hell. Then this is like his inner monologue, but then you see the real reason why he feels like he's floating above Asgard, and it's because the Black Berserkers are carrying him back to his throne room. They take him in, sit him back down on his throne, and walk out.
And then they divulge the fact that he is in basically purgatory.
Yeah, because they are not going to kill him.
But they've killed every single other person.
All the other ones. But they want him to basically suffer the most because of what happened in the cave. Gore just absolutely hates Thor.
Yeah. And he's literally just like basically keeping him on like bed rest on his throne.
Yeah. And
as soon as he gets his strength back, just takes it all away.
Yeah, he's begging them to kill him so he can just be at peace.
This was when the story got really good for me. I really love this.
And like it's just crazy how good
there's much else to that initial conflict. Yeah. He's just there.
Yeah, it's pretty twisted that like because Gore has basically succeeded.
Yeah, at this point, he has his own dark world mm-hmm. that he's creating.
No pun intended. But Gore decides that going around slaughtering and butchering the gods one by one is not very efficient because it quite simply is not. So he decides he wants to create a weapon that can wipe out all the gods throughout time, past, mm-hmm. present, and future, any of that would be born. He wants to create a god bomb. So he goes and finds the gods of time, basically, butchers all of them, puts their blood in a giant pool, and then uses that to teleport himself to the beginning of time. I don't know, was this actually in the story? Because I know I read this at one point.
What?
He teleports himself back in time to the beginning of time when the first Elder God was there. Mm-hmm. And he butchers that Elder God.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Then takes its heart as, like, basically the source of power for the God Bomb. Because the Elder Gods spawned other Elder Gods, but this is the first one, and anything that is spawned from one has half the power. It only has half of what the original had. So obviously if you want the most potent one, you have to kill the first one. So that's what he did. So imagine how powerful that being is. Gore killed him, and now he has successfully constructed his God Bomb.
Yeah, and we did say God Bomb.
Yes.
Bomb, as in, like, Death Star size bomb.
Oh yeah, this thing is huge.
Like a moon size bomb.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure he does have some of the lesser gods enslaved helping him build this bomb too, which is just a slap in the face.
Some of them are Asgardian.
Yeah. They're from all over. Some of them are Old King Thor's daughters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, the middle Thor is there, right? He gets enslaved for a bit.
He does end up traveling to the future.
Yes. The rest of the story, it's a little convoluted, but basically young Thor,
current
Thor,
current day Thor, and old, future Thor,
yeah. Old King Thor team up.
Yes. They all are thrust into the same point in time in the future. At basically the world's end. Mm-hmm. And they have to help each other. At one point, there's current day Thor and old King Thor. They're flying on a ship through space.
Yeah.
And they see space sharks. And then something like kind of thuds into their ship. And current day Thor gets smacked with a space shark. He says something like, what the hell just happened? And then, what the hell just hit me or something like that.
Yeah.
And old King Thor goes, you just got hit with a shark. And current day Thor goes, yeah, I thought that's what happened. And he goes, what vile creature did that? And then old King Thor sees who it is and he's like, I'm afraid the most vile of them all. And it's their younger version of themselves, yeah, whenever he was super arrogant and stuff. Mm. I really like that scene.
Yeah.
Now, in the movie...
Okay, this is a good time to start comparing.
Yeah. This is a good comparison. They're on, like, you know, the space ship.
Yeah.
Emphasis on ship. Like a... Like
not
a,
like our space.
Like a vessel. Yeah. Like a seafaring vessel, but in space. They see, instead of space sharks, they see space dolphins.
In the movie.
In the movie. I hate this. Do you know why? You have a reason, and I like the thing you said about it.
Yeah.
But I'll explain why this grinds my gears. So, you know Lobo in DC Comics, right?
I do, yeah.
Yeah. He's a space bounty hunter, basically. Yeah. His favorite animal is space dolphins.
Okay.
Which are, as far as I know, exclusively referred to in DC Comics, not even Marvel. Because even in this story, they don't talk about space dolphins. And he really likes Aquaman because Aquaman can talk to dolphins.
Like, genuinely likes
Aquaman? Yeah, he genuinely likes Aquaman because he can talk to dolphins. Okay. And space dolphins
are... And he would love to be able to talk
to... He would love to... Yeah. That's my only gripe with that.
Just because
thank you for coming to my TED Talk.
Okay, well, I had a much more poignant thing to say about
it. You really do.
I think that, you know, when we've been talking about how this tone of this story, it's just way darker. It's just a lot more violent. It's a lot more, I wouldn't say gritty, but it's... comparatively to the movie took like a much lighter tone, like Lucas alluded to, you know, there's really don't even commit to any on-screen deaths of any gods.
Yeah.
In a story about a god butcher. And when you see the change from the space sharks to the dolphins, I think that shift is like a tonal representation of the difference in these stories and really kind of represents why this story didn't fit with what they wanted to portray.
They took away its teeth.
They took away the sharp edges of this story and tried to replace them with something lighter, and it doesn't mesh well. And I think that's what we were trying to get to at the first. It was like, gore just doesn't deserve a story with this kind of tone.
No.
This story is just really, I think, an effective representation of what, like, taking your belief to the furthest extent possible will do to a person.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's encapsulating a lot of, like, the folly of man.
Mm-hmm.
And the tone of the movie just didn't get that to land at all.
Yeah.
Especially when they pulled their punches and didn't allow for actual deaths and a lot of the gravity to take place.
So, yeah.
I don't know. I just went on a little tangent, but I think that one scene represents like what they did with the movie versus what they did with that change of the dolphin and the shark really represents both of these stories.
Yeah. Yeah. There's some key points I want to get into that in the future.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah. I was getting ahead of myself.
Yeah. Okay. So we got to the point where we have all three Thors here now and they're going to fight Gore, and they do. They fight him pretty well, actually, considering. Because you gotta think, there's double the hammers now. Yeah. But triple the Thor.
Double the hammer.
Double the hammer. So, Gore actually kind of succeeds in his attempt to at least activate the god bomb.
Which is scary.
Yeah, he activates the bomb.
With Thor's blood.
Yeah.
He slams his head onto the god bomb and is like, all right,
here you go. That's
what I needed.
That's all I needed.
Bit of blood.
Yeah. What? What an absolute savage.
Wait, middle. This is current day Thor that he does that to.
Yes.
Yeah. Just slams him right up against that god bomb.
Yeah, but they're duking it out.
Yeah.
Like this.
Really,
is...
it's. I think I want to say that young Thor's off fighting elsewhere.
Yeah, he's kind of off,
and
because he can't compete ones. With this. He could barely compete with a young Gore that yeah. did not have as much experience.
So he's doing his own thing.
He's kind of doing his own thing, but he's still helpful. Old King Thor kind of gets his butt handed to him a little bit.
He's just weak from time.
Yeah, you know? He's just been worn down.
Like 1,000 years of just getting beat down.
But he gets nailed to a comet and is sent shooting across the universe by Gore.
Yeah.
Like, what the heck? Like, nailed to a comet. Yeah. Yeah, this whole final fight is just insane. The yeah. scale of what they're fighting at.
Mm-hmm.
They do eventually get to, like, the heart of the bomb, literally, because it's a heart, sort of, that's powering it.
Yeah, an elder.
Yeah, an elder god's heart.
The elder god. Yeah. That's key.
So this bomb has already basically gone off, and all the gods are, like, choking on black stuff because they're dying.
Yeah.
So they, while this is happening, they're fighting still, and this is still happening to them.
Yeah.
And they are fighting Gore, but old King Thor actually rear naked chokes Gore and
to buy time.
Yeah, to buy time. While
don't forget he throws him the hammer.
He throws him the hammer.
And gets him in the headlock at the same time.
Yeah. And now current day Thor is wielding both Mjolnirs. And he is trying to absorb the entire bomb.
Yeah. Yeah. Gore's like, well, I've already won. And he's like, I don't think so.
Yeah. And he sees that he's actually doing it. And Gore's like...
He is like in... Oh, you were going to share
a picture. Yeah, we're definitely going to share a picture of this. But he sees that it's working. And Gore's like, that's impossible. And while old King Thor is holding him there, he goes, well, I guess we're going to watch the impossible.
Yeah, that's exactly what he says.
And all the gods realize what's happening. Because they're dying. Mm-hmm. And they can kind of sense that Thor...
He's like is pulling it back.
Doing this, is trying to help them. And so gods are powered by prayer. So all the gods start praying to Thor. And even Odin in current time starts praying to Thor. He says something to the effect of I know you can do this, become the god of gods.
Yes.
Yes. Like, what a badass line. And Thor just absolutely, he absorbs the entire thing.
Yeah.
But he doesn't only absorb the God Bomb.
Yeah.
He also absorbs All Black, the Necro Sword, at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
The visage of this man.
Yeah.
With both hammers and All Black.
Yeah, I turned to that page while we were talking earlier, and it made me pause.
He says, he then tells Gore, because Gore's like, what happened to my weapon? He says, it's not your weapon anymore. It laughs at you, Gore. Its name is All Black the Necro Sword, the Slicer of Worlds, the Anaya Blade. And it was meant to be wielded by a god. And he says, but you were right about one thing. It was also meant to kill them. And then proceeds to make this splash page. Oof. Of him. He just sends out this shock with both hammers. This electricity shock. Also infused with All Black's power. Straight in Gore's face.
Mm-hmm.
It's beautiful.
I want to back up. We missed one thing that I think is really important. They're on this world, in kind of the exposition leading up to their fight. They're met by two family members of Gore, which I thought was odd.
Yes. So I was going to get into that later. Yeah, okay. I'm glad we're getting into it now.
He has a wife, mm-hmm. ostensibly a wife, and a son.
In this future, in after this they've future already world. Been killed.
And the mother of the son is like looking forward to a day where she is constantly asking him, you know, after the God bomb, what's life going to be like? You know, because he's alluding to this fact that we're going to be in a godless future.
Yes.
There won't be a God and we'll all be better for it. And she is optimistic about it. His son he's basically trained his son in this to like, we're like, we kill gods. That's what we do. That is our purpose. And his son knows no other way. And in this story, his son realizes that, let me back up. Right before the God bomb's about to be initiated, his wife is ecstatic and she refers to Gore in her excitement as, you mean everything to me. You're a god to me. Mm-hmm. And he turns to her and he says, what did you call me? And she said, and he said, did you call me a god? And comes over and just kills her on the spot. His wife.
Yeah.
And his son realizes that this has happened. He asks his dad. He says, where's mom? Wasn't she supposed to be here for when the bomb goes off, obviously, because they've been building to this. And he just says to go meet her in some other place, lies to his son.
Yeah.
His son realizes what's happening and shows mercy to modern day Thor, which allows him to be in the place to save everything. So his son at this moment is the key to like his father's demise.
Yes. He was the one that basically helped them succeed.
Yeah. In the end, you realize that this was a construct of him.
Yes.
This was not a spawn of him. This was part of him manifested in this world.
Yeah, this is part of technically the Necrosword.
Yeah. So his wife and his son were a part of the Necrosword. They were key parts of like this whole sentient being. So his wife represented his like optimism for the future, and his son represented his like doubt in himself, and ultimately it was what killed him.
Yeah. And they like
so good.
Yeah, after Thor unleashes this giant blast on Gore, he's like bloodied, he's on the ground, he's like searching around, he's like still, you know, spiteful, all that good stuff, and he's like still saying like, I'm gonna kill you all basically for what you did, like still blaming the gods for everything that happened. Then the boy shows up and he says, was it a god who killed my mother? He realizes who it is. He's like, my son. And he says, or was it you? Or are the two one and the same now, father? Behold Gore, god of hypocrisy. Because he is a hypocrite. Because think about it. He devoted his life, because the gods didn't answer his prayers, to killing all of the gods. But to do so, he had to gain the all-black Necrosword, which then gave him the power to kill a god, which ultimately basically makes him a god himself. But what does he do with all that power? He still fights amongst the gods. He does nothing to help anyone else. That's the same thing. Yeah. The perfect line. The young Thor doesn't realize, because after his little like conversation with his son, it disappears into black.
Yeah.
It disappears into black and into a stone dagger. Young Thor says, the boy just melted into a stone dagger. Is this Gore's work? Then old King Thor says, there never was a boy. There was only ever the weapon and the thing and the things Gore made from it. Then modern day Thor says, but it was the son who helped us defeat the father. And old King Thor says, no, it was the lonely little man who helped defeat the butcher.
Mm.
So it was basically his subconscious defeated him.
Mm-hmm. It's so good.
It's such a good ending.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, here's, I think this is what I drew. This was my takeaway from the story, independent of like the comparisons to the movie, mm-hmm. was that, like, for me, it drew a lot of parallels to, like, it's a very deeply religious story. Mm-hmm. Like, they, I think at one point they, like, actually quote, like, a, what's a hymnal mm-hmm. at one point. Or at least it evoked the same, like, cadence in my brain when I read it. So, like, there's very, like, this idea that there's, like, an endless, I wrote down that this story was an endless, eternal pursuit of a single belief structure, ultimately leading to hypocrisy. Mm-hmm. That is seen a lot in, like, some more radical views on religion. Mm-hmm. Do you think, this is my question to you.
Okay.
Do you think that that's part of why they did not adapt this more closely? Because that, would that fit into, like, our current, like, the overall culture? Would that be a story that the MCU would want to go down that road? Because it's a pretty,
yeah, it's pretty, pretty heavy, it's a story.
Heavy story that hits home pretty, like, the evangelical Christian movement is a thing that people have to reckon with on a daily basis. So, mm-hmm. like, that's the parallel I drew to it. But you could draw that with any sort of religious movement that's, like, more radicalized. Mm-hmm. Do you think that's just, like, too powerful or too, like...
I think... I don't know. Because, you know, you got to think, these are also...
That's a way made, I interpreted the story, yeah, though.
Because the movies are made for a younger audience, yeah, in general. Mm. So I don't think, I think trying to go that heavy into it, it wouldn't have landed with kids, you know, like, right, the kids wouldn't have understood, yeah, but that doesn't mean that you shouldn't do it.
You should, like, stray away completely.
Yeah. I don't think so.
Yeah.
But I do think that was part of the reason, yeah, they changed it.
I mean, this is a heavy and really violent story.
Now, You go ahead and talk about whatever you want.
Now, that was my big, yeah, question that this story posed to me was, like, would this even fit into their model, yeah, for a movie?
See,
do we even want to see this in a movie? Because this is, like, a heavy thing. I do want to see it, but, like, I don't know if the world wants that, you know?
Yeah, I get that. See, the thing, I have a problem with this, the movie's adaptation, because, first of all, Like we've established, they took the teeth out of, and the sharp edges out of this story.
Yeah.
Especially Gore, because you never see him actually really butcher anything besides, yeah, the first god. And even then, you don't really see that much. Like, it's...
I mean, he stabbed them all the way through.
He does. But, like,
yeah,
you
I know
don't
what you
see...
Mean.
Yeah.
It's not on the level of, like, the descriptions and the...
Yes. Like, you see, story, like... actual bodies and stuff in that, which you do in the movie, but very briefly. They just touch on it and they're like, oh,
it's like alluded to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In this, I'm like, why not do the three Thors?
That's a good question.
Like,
well,
that's my, like, after rereading this,
they had two.
Taika Waititi could have done this. There is so much comedy gold.
With three Thors.
This,
yeah.
Because not
all
only,
different versions of him.
Think of Chris Hemsworth playing
three variations
of the same guy in different points in their life. You have him playing pre-Thor 1.
Basically Thor 1.
Yeah. Yeah. You have him playing pre-Thor 1 Thor. Then you have the current version they have.
The Avengers Thor.
And then you have the much older version of,
like,
him.
The wiser version.
Yeah. Why would you not do that? Like, I get that they wanted...
Okay, I have
Jane
a...
Jane Foster.
I'm going to pose why I... This is my biggest takeaway from comparing these two things.
Okay.
Is that I believe that we're starting to see this larger narrative really constrain the storytelling.
Yeah.
And that is why I think... They don't want to introduce the concept of three Thors because they needed a way to tie in Jane. They needed a way to tie into all these other things that we haven't even alluded to yet.
I feel
at the end of that.
Yeah, I feel like you could have You could have still had Jane in there too.
But what I mean is, like, I think they're trying so hard to craft like a long game story that they're constrained by what they can do with the individual stories. Mm-hmm. And I think that we saw that, like, that was the forefront of why this didn't necessarily work, because they were trying to, they tied the Guardians in the first 30 minutes. They tied at the very end of this movie, Galactus shows up. What? Is that not Galactus?
No, that's Eternity. That's not Galactus.
That dude looks, whatever that thing is, looked almost exactly like Galactus. Yeah. And I was like, why did this person look like Galactus?
You're talking about the weird space looking thing, yes. Right? Yeah, that's Eternity. That's not Galactus.
But make him look different.
That's how he looks
exactly
in the,
like Galactus.
That's exactly how he looks in the comics.
Okay,
fair. Like that was a perfect.
I interpreted it as Galactus, and I was like, "Why is Galactus in this movie?"
No. It was not Galactus.
Okay,
but even so, why did they put it
exactly? Because they're trying to
build a narrative
but larger than just this one. That's my interpretation. That I think it bogs down some of the of the storytelling.
But like you have that, and also now I'm gonna get into why I think they ruined Thor. Not Thor, but Gore.
Okay.
So let's talk about his in the comic. I'm gonna talk about comic specific Gore. What his plan was. Okay? Yeah.
Okay.
See if you pick up what I'm putting down. He devotes his life to a crusade.
Yeah.
Of wiping out all gods in the universe.
Yes.
Okay?
Okay.
He goes world by world doing this.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Then he decides this isn't happening quick enough. I need to make sure this sticks. So I'm going to I'm going to construct a weapon that can do it in a matter of seconds, almost like the snap of a finger.
Okay, I see where you're going with this.
They took the best part about Gore and gave it to Thanos in Avengers Endgame and Infinity War. That's the reason Thanos in Avengers Endgame and Infinity War had such a compelling story. Because what was he doing?
What he did in the Infinity War?
No, not in the original story.
Okay.
The only reason he sought out the stones was to impress Death.
He snapped his fingers,
but he wiped out everything.
It wasn't I'm going to take...
No, he wasn't bringing balance to the Force or whatever.
So the same idea
that Gore
is going for.
Yeah, he went from world to world,
okay,
wiping out half the population on each world. Then he decided this isn't efficient enough.
Well, there might
I
be
need
your
to snap
answer.
My finger.
That might be your answer as
so
to why.
Then you can't retread basically the same exact thing.
Yeah, which takes the gravity away from the character.
Exactly. And Gore, his is better. His story is arguably better because in doing his crusade, he became the thing that he hated.
Yeah.
It was still a great story in Avengers Endgame and stuff. Mm-hmm. But they used one of the best parts of Gore for a different character.
And then tried to use Gore. I get what you're saying. So you're not necessarily saying that. You're definitely not saying that Infinity War was like a bad story.
Oh, no, it was already a great story.
But you're saying you're trying to use a character that you already used their main plot.
Yeah,
to,
you use their entire premise. Like,
purpose.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And now you're trying to make a movie about him.
Okay, that's fair. I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
I'm glad you didn't tell me that before this.
Yeah, because like, think about it. It's the same plan.
It is.
And they knew how good this story was. So they said, hey, let's make Thanos do that.
Yeah.
Let's make Thanos do that instead.
There you go.
There you go.
That's the answer. Here's my last question.
Okay.
Well, a thought and a question. This story would have fit perfect in a DC Elseworlds model.
Like the actual comic story.
Yes.
Yes.
And what I mean by that is, you know, where we talked about on our DC Slate episode, where they're allowing for other spin-off stories and different creators to tell various stories that aren't tying into an overall narrative for the universe.
Mm-hmm.
Like Joker, like the Batman. Do you think we'll ever see a day where stories like this can exist? Like in
I hope
in
so.
A like in
their own
self-contained. The MCU? like, are we going to be able to see some of these self-contained stories, like, that are a little bit darker?
Because
I think that's what the Elseworlds is going to lean in towards.
I don't think in the MCU, because they're too far in.
I know.
To their model. But I'm glad DC is doing it.
And they might take notes from it. They might,
maybe.
Yeah. So, if it pans out for the DCU. Yeah. I mean, they already have, like, 3 installments in it, because they were like, we're not going to retcon all these creators.
Yeah. Especially Matt Reeves, the Batman, and...
And yeah, and Joker.
Joker, yeah. I mean, why would you? Those are great.
I don't know. That was my last thought, was like, man, this would have been a really good option for that if they had like that avenue built in.
And like, here's my thoughts. These are my closing thoughts about the movie in general. Like I said before, everyone in this movie, the creative team, everyone's good. But I think Taika went a little too meta with his humor.
Yeah.
Here's my thoughts. I think the joke is the movie. Marvel let him make this movie this way. I think that's the joke.
You're getting a little meta.
No, that's what I think. That is my conspiracy theory.
Yeah.
Is that like...
Because that's a conspiracy.
This is the after hours. Like, I'm thinking wild right now. I'm a little hopped up on this Echelon coffee. Think about it. Taika is very like, I don't know how to describe.
I mean, his storytelling is a little more cerebral,
but his humor is very ironic.
Yeah,
I think the fact that Marvel let him make this movie is what's funny to him. You know?
Maybe. We'll never know. We'll never know.
Because I know he could put out a banger if he wanted to.
Like you said, the 3 Thors is comedy gold.
And it was comedy gold. It was right there in front of you.
Yeah.
I don't know. Think about it. Chris Hemsworth, he's funny.
He could have pulled off the 3
Thors. He could have pulled off the 3 Thors easily.
He's already been all versions of himself, basically, except for the Odin Thor.
But like, I don't know. I think that's the joke.
We're gonna end on that.
Yeah.
That's good. That's good stuff. Well, go read this story if you're interested in it. But I'm sure there's other, I don't know the other influences. I'm sure Jane
Foster is the War Run. Yeah. I don't know about any others. Yeah. That's the only thing I don't know.
Read some comics.
Yeah, just read some comics.
You know? So we're gonna wrap up. Ready to do this thing?
I don't know what we're doing.
The wrap up, the conclusion. All right. Thank you all for listening.
Yes, thank you very much.
Why are you being so weird about it?
I wasn't being weird.
Thank you. You said thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
So the various ways you can support the show. So you can go on to Spotify or Apple Podcasts. You can give us a rating. Or a view, if the platform allows.
Yeah.
The best way you could do is to share this with a friend.
Yes.
That you think might like to hear our voices.
I don't know.
They like comics. I don't know. Our voices, they're fine. But our content's probably better.
Somebody told me that I have a good voice for radio, and I said, are you high?
All right.
That's all I'm going to say.
Okay. If you want to share our radio voices, just share away. You can follow us on Instagram and Twitter. Yes. We don't post a lot on Twitter. We use Instagram more. So if you really want that good content.
If you want that good.
Yeah.
Go on to Instagram.com.
Quit saying .com. We made it so good this time.
Instagram at OmniTalkPod.
Yes. Or you can join our Discord, which the link is in the show notes.
Yes, and the Discord I pay attention to frequently.
Yeah.
I actually got on today to check if there was any updates.
Nobody.
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 That's why you all need to get up in them guts. Y'all need to support us.
Yeah.
Support each other.
Yeah, and most of all, thank you. And keep it vibey.
Stay vibey. That's in the notes, people. Stay vibey.
I wrote it down. I said, thank you, stay vibey. Or we could always end the show as we just vibing and keeping it tight. You do the same. What do you think about that?
I don't like that. Yeah. I don't like that at all.
We just vibing and keeping it tight, babe.
We just vibing and jiving.
I don't like that.
I don't like it either. It didn't sound good coming out of my mouth.
We're vibing. That's the end. Peace.